First of all, I'd like to thank you for including me in this wonderful meeting that you're having up here. It's good to be with you. If all your speakers have been like the last two, I'm very happy, however, that I got here only this afternoon. They didn't leave a whale of a lot to talk about on this program.
They were terrific, both of them.
But still and all, it's good to be here and to add my testimony to this wonderful AA way of life. This has been quite a weekend for me. A fellow AA rode up with me, so we had a meeting all the way from Beverly Hills to San Luis yesterday afternoon. We stopped there for coffee and had a meeting there. Then we went on up to Hanford and had a meeting there. Paso Robles and had a meeting there. Before and after. And then we had breakfast this morning and had another meeting. And now I'm here this afternoon for another. So this is a great weekend for me. I reckon that might be called living AA. I don't know. Perhaps it fits right into the subject. I noticed that the first two gentlemen were old-timers. I, too, am an old-timer. I had my wrist got back, too. And I shall endeavor to look at it, but if I don't, just throw one of those soap bottles at me when the time comes. You know, one of the strange things about us alcoholics is that when we come into this program, we think that our problems have been entirely unique. We don't feel that anybody on earth has ever been faced with the problems that we have been called upon to face. And we feel that life and its people, and perhaps God and the devil have conspired to make turn up on us. We've really had it tough time. And we come into this great fellowship and stick around a while, and we find that there was nothing unique about our problem at all. We find that everyone amongst us have had the same problem. And we find that our difference is in our similarities. That's all. I think that after we've been around this fellowship for a few years, we come to see that a standard graph, a graph of our descent and a graph of our ascent, would fit every one of us. Every one of us. The only difference would be time, place, and degree. You see, when I was tooling my heels in the county jail, some of you were in the Heights. It's the same difference. It's the same difference. Just the difference in time, place, and degree. So, perhaps you're going to hear much in what few remarks that I have to say that you've already heard from this platform. But I don't think that makes much difference either. Before I get lost, I might just make a couple of general remarks. Insofar as I'm concerned, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most significant thing that's happening in the world today. It seems to me that it's more significant than the atom bomb, the Russian situation, perhaps even more significant than humanism, you know. Because it seems to me, the brotherhood of man in action, as we see it no place else in the world today. In my short experience, I have seen the priest and the preacher right alongside the agnostic and the atheist. The doctor, the lawyer, the bootblack, the streetwalker. The black man, the white man, the Jew, the Gentile, and the Greek. I've seen them all come into this great fellowship, as sick as I was when I came here 7 years ago. And I've seen them all do the same things that I have done in their own way. And I've seen every one of them come back to normalcy and true normalcy, to a happy, peaceful, and joyous way of life. It's a terrific thing. And it seems to me that this, perhaps, is the light spot in our picture. I even have the feeling, whilst this has nothing to do with our AA program and our AA work, that I have the feeling that perhaps the spirit that is AA may be that leaven which will leaven the whole loaf. And perhaps cause the spiritual renaissance in this great country of ours that will save this civilization. It seems that important in my way of thinking. And certainly it has proven that important in my own life. I don't take very much time on the before Alcoholics Anonymous part of my life, but I will say this to you in passing, that if you drink a little liquor, I did too. If you had a little trouble with it, so did I. If you had some family trouble, I did too. If you were incarcerated, is that a wonderful word? That word is for non-alcoholics. If you were in the bucket, at your time, I was there too. If you had a little trouble with music, but there was no visible means of support, I did too. If you met the people and talked to them and they talked to you, and there wasn't nobody there. I did too. And if eventually those voices were inside of your head, and they kept talking to you, and there was nobody around at all, but they kept talking, and you couldn't stop. Maybe 54 hours at a time, saying the same thing. Too noisy to think. I had that trouble too. And at the last, I was having a little bit of trouble falling over on my face and chewing my tongue full of holes and babbling like an idiot. I hope you didn't have that trouble. And even later, the last time that I toppled over, I didn't chew my tongue and I didn't babble. I just turned blue. And I woke up sometime later with the oxygen squad from the Beverly Hills Receiving Hospital working me over. And they told me that they'd had a rough time. They seemed to think that to all intents and purposes I'd already left for parts unknown. And they didn't think that anybody else would ever be able to bring me back. So they advised me not to do that anymore. They were against it. Well, now that had been advice that I had been getting for many years, for some 10 years, as a matter of fact. I drank for 25 years. Since the last 10, I drank very badly. And in all that time, people were telling me, Chuck, you can't drink, you gotta quit. But nobody ever told me why I couldn't drink, nor did anybody ever tell me how to quit. They just told me I couldn't drink, you gotta quit. Many amongst them seemed to have something to do with willpower and backbone. And my doctor particularly spent much time analyzing my backbone for me. He didn't think much of it. He had some very descriptive adjectives to use, which I won't use this afternoon. And he told me on numerous occasions that I might better stand up and be a man. But it didn't seem to me that that helped very much. My preacher used to talk with me too a little bit about these things. That is right funny. Because even with the whips and jingles, even when I sort of had to hold myself together, I could look him right in the eyes and say, I'm curious. I would say to myself, what the hell does he know about alcohol? He's never had a drink in his life. And besides, if he had my troubles, he'd be drunk too. But I should like to say, before I go any further, that now I have come to believe that every true religion has the answer to the disease of alcoholism, every one of them. Perhaps their difficulty, if they have any, is that they don't have the answer or the keys of the alcoholic himself. But certainly, the answer to the problem is there. But it remained for me to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to find out what was the matter with me and to find out how to get rid of it. You see, alcoholism is a disease of a twofold nature, an allergy of the body coupled with an expression of the mind. Now for the allergy of the body. Once that has become manifest within us, we have no more good drinking clocks left. As drinkers, we are all done. And I think it's very good for us to recognize that fact. I think it's very good for us, alcoholic and non-alcoholic alike, to know what we're up against. To know that we cannot eat this thing by practicing. That no one amongst us has ever been able. Once the allergy of the body has become manifest within us, no one amongst us has ever been able to, again, drink normally. It's good for us to know we're fighting a losing battle, and no one has ever been able to beat it alone. I think it helps us to do the things that this book tells us to do, tells us that, or suggests that we do, if we want to get sober and stay sober. Now, this isn't a little disease, like, for instance, chickenpox, or one of those. It isn't one of those things at all. This is one of the worst diseases in the country. It is third as a killer in the United States today, topped only by heart and cancer. It is second as a cause for insanity, topped only by one of our social diseases. So it's a bad thing. It's a drastic thing. And to this day, there is no cure for the physical side of this disease, and in my opinion, no cure for either side. But there is a reprieve in our program of Alcoholics Anonymous for the disease. Now, it's good to know also that this is not just a figment of the mind of those of us in Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Kelly, who heads up the great Yale Institute of Alcoholic Studies, tells us that in their experience, they have never known one alcoholic who has ever been able to go back into life and drink socially again. Not one in all the history. And in our fellowship here, once in a while, one amongst us gets the idea that maybe we don't need this program any longer. Maybe we know all about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe we know a great deal about ourselves, and we have decided that this knowledge is going to stand us in good stead, and so we don't need these meetings anymore. And maybe we even decide that on a hot day like today, a short beer doesn't matter at all. It'd be all right. It's a short beer. And we try it, and we immediately lose our seniority in this great fellowship. It's gone. It's gone. So no one amongst us has ever been able to go out into life and drink socially again. Now, our book tells us very plainly that if we be alcoholics, we cannot expect to get sober and stay sober on the basis of self-knowledge alone. I think that's good for us to remember also. I think it's good for us to remember again that this willpower and backbone and standing up and being a man has nothing to do with our approach in Alcoholics Anonymous. Has nothing to do with it at all. We don't look at this thing as a moral issue or as a willpower issue or anything else. Why? Because we're not willful drinkers. We are compulsion drinkers. We are compulsion drinkers. It took me a long time to get this through my head. Many amongst you, I am sure, have heard me say over the years, I'm an alcoholic because I drank too much liquor over too long a period of time too often. I believe that. And many amongst you might have heard me say on numerous occasions that I never took that first drink by accident. But I always chose my time to take that first drink, and I believed that for a long time. But with some almost 7 years to look back and sort of see what's happened to me on this program, and look over the years preceding the program, I have to try to answer some very difficult questions. If I was running my own life so well, if I chose my time to take my first drink, how come my wife had called to turn on me 2 weeks in advance? How come? That's pretty rough. But she could. She could always do it. No, we are not willful drinkers. We're compulsion drinkers. And therefore, we don't spend any time on willpower and backbone. The book tells us that if we be alcoholics, that it seems that under certain circumstances, certain conditions, there is only one defense against that first drink. And that's help from a power greater than itself. Help from a power greater than itself. This I believe, as I believe that I'm here this afternoon. I could not get sober and stay sober. It was only after coming to this room and attempting to live it to the best of my ability that I've enjoyed so much. I think this is the reason that I so thoroughly and completely and without reservation subscribe to the ABCs of this program. A, that I am an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. B, that probably no human power could ever relieve my alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if so. That's my AA program. And in thinking of living it, I returned the book back and sort of review what has happened to me in the past 7 years. I came to the program having already taken the first step. It was rather an interesting thing, a little bit difficult to understand, even today. But I had started my last drunk on a Friday before Christmas, 6 years ago last Christmas. And for some reason, I had gotten drunk in a hurry. The very first night I made it on this occasion, that was rather new to me too, because I usually sort of drift at the end of the day. Sometimes it took me quite a little while to get drunk. But always I made it. I never failed on that result. And sometimes I think maybe my own definition of being drunk was a little different from what we might term normalcy too. Because I'd always subscribe to this little definition. He is not drunk who from the floor can lift his head and take one more. But he is drunk who plots good lies and can neither lift his head nor rise. That was my definition of it. But this time I got drunk in a hurry. And I woke up sometime about the middle of January, having been drinking the clock around since the Friday before Christmas. Woke up with a body completely filled with alcohol. I was loaded as anybody could be, and yet for some unknown reason I woke up with a clear head. And it remained with me for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And for the first time in my life, I took a look at me and saw what was there, and there wasn't anything. There wasn't anything. I knew that for 25 years I'd gone steadily back, and there was no place else to go. I knew, without knowing why, that I was next to a back. That I couldn't beat this thing alone, that I must have help. And I made my decisions as to where I was going to go to get that help before I lost my sense. Now, from that day to this, thank God, I have not had a drink of liquor. Even though I had the DTs pretty badly after that and had a rough time for a long time. From that morning to this,
I have never had a drink.
As soon as I was able, physically, I went out and found an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, because that was included in my decision. And when I heard this preamble and these 12 steps read, I couldn't believe my ears. I couldn't believe that a bunch of drunks had concocted, had put together, had worked out a program so wonderful as this. It seemed to me that regardless of how far any of us had gone with our alcoholism, if we lived according to these principles, we would get sober and stay sober. I seemed sure of that, but it didn't help a great deal in my case, because I was fearful that I'd already done too much damage to my thinking apparatus to get this thing, to understand it and apply it in my life. However, I knew that I wanted it more than life itself. And so, from that night on, I was in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting every night of the week. Every night, found me in a meeting, sitting in the back row, sitting on my hands to keep from bothering the people next to me, shaking and sweating and freezing all at the same time, picking up two or three little things and taking them home with me, and thinking about them all night long. And it was very fortunate that I had something to think about in those nights, because I wasn't sleeping very well. I wasn't sleeping well at all. The next night I was in another meeting, and I'd take a couple of things home with me and have that to think of. And so on. And maybe it was 6 months, during which time I had gotten in the habit of going a little early to these meetings and helping them put the chairs around and staying till late and picking up the ashtrays and taking out the coffee cups, because I wanted to feel like I was a part of this thing. Maybe 6 months of that went on, and I woke up to the fact that it was sober. Just woke up to the fact that it was sober. Had been all the time. Had already passed two or three periods when ordinarily I'd been drunk, and there wasn't even the desire to drink. And it was the greatest awakening in my life. Now that's a little over 6 years ago. And from that day to this, everything that has happened in my life has just happened. And I have to sort of look back and try to figure out why. And that's the only thing I can talk about this afternoon. The opinions that I have come to accept as to the way this program has worked and is working in my own life. Because seemingly, I have so little to do with the good that has come into my life. I believe on the very first night that I came in, that I would have liked to have gone on and taken that second step. I have taken the first, completely, without reservation. And I think I would have liked to have taken the second step. I think I would have liked to have believed that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I had no delusions about that word sanity itself. I needed to be restored to sanity, and I knew it. I'd seen too much and heard too much to have any qualms about the word sanity itself. If one is entirely and completely sane, they don't find it necessary to go around slapping pictures off the wall. I never caught Mrs. C. slapping any of our pictures off the wall yet. She don't find it necessary. Even though they're not so hot as pictures, she'd probably rather have a Rembrandt or something like that. But she hasn't slapped them off the wall, but I had to. Because I'd be lying there in that bed, and I'd look across the room, and there'd be somebody leering out through one of those frames at me. And I'd look away, and pretty soon I'd look back, and he's still there. And pretty soon I'd catch myself just fastened on him. Couldn't get my eyes off of him, and his old neck would start to expand, and just keep getting longer and longer, and pretty soon he'd be right over me, pretty soon my face. The only way I could get rid of him is to slap the thing over the wall. Yes, I would have liked to have believed that some power could restore me to sanity. I would have liked also to turn my will and my life over to care of God. But I didn't seem to think that was possible. You know, there's one thing that brands us alcoholics as a little different from those suffering from any other disease. It is the self-condemnation that goes along with the disease of alcoholism. We hate our insides. We hate ourselves. And that was the way with me. I didn't like any part of me, and I figured God didn't either. However, I would have liked to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So, in my book, first, the admission of defeat, the complete admission of defeat. Second, the recognition of the need for help. Just the recognition of the need for help. And third, honestly attempting to practice these simple principles in all of our affairs, one day at a time. It's as simple as that in my book. Because I did not come here for anything but relief from alcoholism. The only thing I was thinking about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was sobriety. And I would have done anything that I could do to get sobriety. Because in my case, enough was too much. I wanted sobriety very, very much. Now I had all the problems that any of us have on coming to the program. All of them. I've stood by and watched my business life, my family life, and my personal life fall completely apart. And there were all kinds of problems. Family, financial, social, and otherwise. But I didn't come here for the solution to those problems. And it would have been nice to think that a solution might have been included in this thing, but it didn't occur to me. I came here and started doing the things that this book suggests as honestly as it could for one reason. The back. That's all. And yet, after a period of time, in attempting to live according to these principles one day at a time, I woke up to the fact that I'd already moved out of hell into heaven. And I had to thank God. So I am just as sure as that I stand here. If we do completely admit defeat, if we do recognize the need for help, and if we honestly perform these simple things, we get all the help we need from this power greater than ourselves. It seems to me that is as simple as that. I suspect that there are a few little things that maybe we overlook. Maybe sometimes we quickly and readily admit that we're powerless over alcohol. Maybe we would be tickled to death for some power, any power, to remove the alcoholic problem. If you leave us alone in the rest, in the other things in life, we don't want any interference in these other things. We're still getting along. Maybe some of us say, I drink too much. Sure. And I don't do a very good job when I'm drunk. But when I'm sober, I'm all right running the rest of this life of mine. And I still want to run it. And I still want the credit to go with it, you see. So, get me sober. Take the alcoholic problem. But leave me alone here. And then, like others, when we come to the program, maybe we have a few little things that are not quite so apparent as this alcoholic problem. That we think nobody knows anything about. Maybe even God don't know about them. Because we've got them buried pretty deep back here, you know. And we're not willing to give those things up either. We're doing all right with this. So we don't want any help in those departments of our life. So we say, all right, I'm tired of over alcohol. I'll go with you there. I'll take my alcoholic problem and I'll do all right. And these other things. And I think perhaps we're still due for a little trouble when we think like that. It seems to me, if we recognize the need for this help from a power greater than ourselves, that maybe we have to recognize that maybe the way to get it is including everything. And maybe again, many amongst us have had their lives all divided up. Maybe we've had our pigeonhole over here for so-called spiritual or religious things. That's over here in this one. We've got that filed away here. And alongside it, we've had a pigeonhole that says family. And alongside of that, we've had one that says business. And alongside of that, we've got one that says social life. And alongside of that, and maybe a pretty large one, we've got miscellaneous, you see. So we've got our lives all separated in parts. And we think some of them are more important than others. Maybe we think some of them are more spiritual than others. And maybe that's the thing that sort of throws us too. And maybe just the simple application of these 12 principles in all of our affairs. The last hour at step number 12 that the preceding speaker was talking about. Maybe just the application of these principles in all of our affairs. Put this life back together for us. Make it one unit. You see. And make us see that there's nothing more spiritual than another. Make us see that nothing is more important than another. Make us see that life and the living thereof is the only thing that counts. You see. And it just works out that simple. Seems to me like anybody that would come 250 miles or something would have something profound and something big to say. But this program is simplicity itself. Simplicity itself. There's nothing big to say about it that I can see. It's just the honest application of these simple little principles, one day at a time, in everything that we do. And these things work out nice. And I think, again, sometimes, if we start looking for results, I think therein I was most fortunate to you. Because the one thing that was important to me was to get through. And I started my new life in this family. Mrs. Chamberlain had sought counsel to get rid of me. Our children would be glad when I was gone. They couldn't even come in when I was about. They would be glad when I quit interfering with their life. And they wanted me out of the way. My boss was all done with me. He saw me on numerous occasions that he was throwing me bodily out of the window. But he didn't think it was worth his time. He thought I was going to die over the weekend. And I was all done with me too. I didn't love it. Now, immediately that I started in on this new way of life, I called Mrs. C in and I said, honey, it's no longer of any consequence to me that I live under this roof or not. I'll never ask a thing of you as long as I live, but what? If I have anything ever that will add to your happiness, let me give it to you. And we closed the book. And neither one of us knew what we were talking about. And I called the boys in and I said, boys, there's no father in the household any longer. You don't need to love me, you don't need to respect me, and above all, you don't need to obey me. I'll never ask a thing of you as long as you live, but come on. If I can ever add anything to your life, let me do it. And we closed the book. And we didn't know what we were talking about. And then after about 4 or 5 weeks of absence from the office, I showed up down there. Fortunately for me, the phone rang as I walked in. And I was talking on the phone when my boss man came in. And he not only was hurt because he had given me a very substantial Christmas present on the Friday before Christmas. That was the day I started my license. And yeah, I had to show it up for 4 weeks. So he not only was hurt, but he's a German and he was mad, clear truth. And so while I'm on the telephone, he moves away the furniture. And as soon as I hang up the phone, he starts asking me. And I said, Victor, leave me alone. I don't work for you anymore. I'm not here to clean up this desk. I'm here to do the things you paid me for. Last month. And the month before. And just as soon as I get even with you, I'll walk out of that front door on my own account. And you'll never owe me a penny as long as you live. But for God's sake, leave me alone. I must get even. And we close that book. And now all that I did from then until now is to try as honestly as I know how to practice these simple little questions in everything that I do. Nothing more. Nothing more. And this picture has completely changed. And everything in life is new as far as I'm concerned. If I should stand here this afternoon and tell you of the things that have happened, most of you would get up and walk out because you'd say the boy's marbles did get away and he hasn't found them yet. But still and all, they have. And for such time as we have left, I'd just like to tell you a few of those things, and a few of the conclusions that I've had to reach. I still have the same one. Thank God. I mean, that's 6 of the finest years that ever anybody could dream. We lived like kittens. And whilst she was a non-alcoholic, and it was she who had the shame that went with my weeks and weeks of lying in that bed back in the bedroom. She had to try to keep the boys pacified. She had to keep the neighbors out. And it was pretty rough on her. And yet she tells me now, Daddy, if we had to go through those 10 years of hell to find what we have today, I'm glad that it happened. We have the same boys. Billy's married now, has his own home. Every time they get a day off, they're always my house. And the only way I get rid of is to get up and start putting the ashtrays, dumping the ashtrays about 1 or 2 in the morning. And finally says, Billy, Papa wants to go to bed. We gotta go home. Because we find much of joy with each other. And the little guy, he's 18 now, bigger than I am too. But we were sitting at table the other night, and I was saying, well, I'm so glad we found this way of life. Before there were too many permanent scars. And Nicky spoke up and he says, what do you mean, permanent scars? Well, he says, this was a blessing in disguise. Because through this, we've all come back home. And I thought that was true. Still have the same boss. But what it is. We sit and talk about these things and he's a non-alcoholic. But he understands these principles. We sit and talk about these things now and the tears run down our cheeks. And we're not ashamed. The man paid me 2.5 times what he did. 7 years ago. And when I tell him it's not necessary, he says yes and no. And it gives me so much of joy to share these things with you. And they've all come out of this simple little program of ours. Because this is all that we've tried to do. Practice these principles one day at a time. And it seems that probably that the simplicity of the thing is the thing that throws so many out. It seems that it's so simple we look right straight at it. And we don't see it. Being alcoholic, we think there must be a hard way to do this thing to this. You see. And so maybe we look right straight at it. And I find it so much in recent years where those who come to us, they say, well, I can understand this program well. I can get everything about it but the spirit. And I can't find the spirit of the program. I can't find God. And if it weren't so serious, we'd want to laugh. Because, as we've heard here this afternoon, there's nothing here but the spirit. And again, I wonder if it isn't confusion in our own minds that upsets the ship. I wonder if it isn't because we're always looking someplace else. Looking yonder, 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 yonder. Perhaps even looking right over the thing we're looking for. And we can't find it. I wonder if perhaps we don't have to come home and honestly start uncovering. You see, quite uncovered. Putting our own house in order that we might find this wonderful thing. I wonder if it isn't the self-honesty that perhaps is the very basis and core of the church right here within us. Maybe that's why the book spends so much time on rigorous honesty, self-honesty. And maybe therein we can find the rest. And maybe again, it's because the thing is so close. Maybe we find after a while that God hid himself in the last place we ever looked. And that's deep within itself. I don't know if I had this the last time I was up here, but I've had more fun out of it than the picture. This is a story about the two little fish. These two little fish were swimming around out in the Pacific Ocean. They were just having the time of their life. Sun was shining and the water was nice and they were just having a big time. Not a care in the world. And so some big wise fish swam by and he says, "Good morning, boys. Isn't the water fine this morning?" And he swam on off. And as soon as he got out of here, these little guys got in the huddle. And they said, "The man spoke about what?" "What? What, what?" He says, "I don't know. Never heard of it." "Did you? Did you ever hear what?" He says, "No. Never heard of it in my life." So the three of them swam all over the Pacific Ocean looking for water. In which they lived and moved and had to be. I wonder if that is not answer. I wonder if that is not answer. I wonder if we're not looking in so many places. When all we have to do is come back home. Get on it. Start uncovering. And start maybe after a while. Not too fast. Because I believe that we can't force these things. I think we have a preparation work to do. We have a little cleaning up to do, maybe, before we can see this thing through and before we can get an answer. But maybe as soon as we get honest enough to start cleaning up, and with a childlike trust, just do these things the best we can, to get these things for revelation. I remember perhaps every 3 years and a half after coming to this program, and I've done lots of talking by that time, and lots of listening, and lots of reading. And particularly, I didn't spend much time on step number 11. And I liked it, and I thought maybe that I understood it a bit. But after 3 years and a half, I came home there one night after a talk. The family were in bed asleep, so without turning on a light or anything, I went over and sat in my big chair. I spent a few minutes first on 10 steps. I always love to do that. And then I like to go to bed without a little look at the day. Not so much to see what was done or left undone, but to see the motive. How much of those actions of that day were not my will, but in accord with thy will. I like to look at it. It's not very reassuring, even after almost 7 years of trying. It's a pretty bleak picture. But I think the good to be derived is to be honest enough to see where we've made our mistakes, decide to do better, and then do a little better. It seems that's all the universe asks us. And so I sat there a bit and looked at my day and then drifted into thinking about step number 11. And something happened. Something happened. I was thinking, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious, and the word conscious exploded in my face. Conscious contact with God. And from that night to this, I have had my answers pretty satisfactory. Conscious contact with God. If this is to be a conscious thing with me, it must happen in me. It must take place in my consciousness. I must be aware of it. And oh, I think maybe this is the very foundation, the very basis of this great fellowship of ours. I think through the very necessity of walking in this way, lest we die, we accidentally stumble on the greatest discovery on earth. the greatest discovery on earth, the answer to the riddle of life itself, that there's nothing in the world had a conscious contact with God, as we understand. I come to believe that those words, as we understood it, after the word God, is probably the great rock on which our fellowship is built. I think this is the reason why no one amongst us can give this thing to another. You see, no one amongst us can give this thing to another. If it's to be conscious with me, it must happen in me. Therefore, I must establish this thing according to my own understanding, my own ideas, and my own acceptance of God. Albeit we're all looking for the same power, and albeit we all find the same, each in his own way, you see, must do this. And I sat there and tried to make it real to myself that night. And I started in by thinking of my own case. Thinking of our relationship in the past 3.5 years, which had become very close indeed. And I got to asking myself, what could these kids want that I wouldn't give them if I had it? And I couldn't think of anything. Even my own blood, that did want a very close and loving relationship. And I got to thinking, what could they possibly do that would make me want to throw them out and never see them again? And I could think of nothing. And then I got to thinking about my own human father and my feelings toward him in my youth. And they were very close and very real. And it seemed to me particularly my memory of the traipsing out through the countryside to the barn dancers with him. He was the best barn dance fiddler in our part of the country. Every time I found that he was going out, I'd start hounding him because I loved those fiddles and guitars. And every once in a while he'd say, all right, you can go along. So after dinner we'd start down the towpath, he with his fiddle in one hand and me in the other. And I could rip my legs and wildcats as long as I was hanging onto his hand. But this soon became the offense and I had to call on them straight to death. Straight to death until I could get a hold of his hand again. And then it was all right. And then I sort of expanded this into thinking about our father. Right. And thinking what the young teacher said about this. And he said, in him we live and move and have our being. A very close relationship indeed. And again, closer than hands and feet, nearer than the air that we breathe. That's very close. And again, I am in the Father, and he and me, and I in thee, said he. Certainly a very close relationship. And then, just sort of out of the nowhere, came the thought, when the disciples said to the young man, Master, teach us to pray. He didn't say, now if you first do this or that or the other thing, my father or I might help you. Or my father and I might help you. He didn't say that. He said, after this manner, pray ye. Our Father, which art in heaven. His Father, your Father and mine. Oh, this is terrific. This is a terrific thing. Seemingly, again, quite fast, we find that the answer to the disease of alcoholism and the answer to the riddle of life itself is one and the same answer. Nothing in the world but a conscious partnership with God as I understand him in the business of living. That's right. A satisfactory virtue. Partnership with God, as I understand, in the entire business of living. And how fortunate we are. I come to bless the day that I became an alcoholic. Because without that 10 years of burnout, without that 10 years of help, I could not fulfill the conditions. I could not come back home, give up, and walk in this way. Because I could not admit defeat. I tried, and my ego wouldn't let me. So I blessed the day. And in closing, it seems to me the longer we go along, that life itself, it's the simple, it defies explanation. There's no pressure from any quarter at all. No pressure from any quarter at all. Why? Because all we want to do is to walk in this way one day at a time. So there's nobody to please. There is no one of whom we would seek favor. Not at all. Because again, in all of our relations, we just want to practice these things. There is nothing to defend. Nothing at all. Because the truth needs no defense. There is no one to impress. No one to fool. Not even myself. And the great and one of the most freeing things that has happened in my life. There is no further need for judgment. No further need. Because after we stick around a bit, and after we see the workings of these principles for a while, we have to conclude that we're all cut from the same cloth. A little different pattern, but everyone from the same material. Everyone, our father's child, whether we know it or not. Even if we disbelieve it, we can't change the reality. The only thing we can do is change our position in it. You see. And just as soon as we close the old book, come back home, get on with a childlike trust, we find that the past is no longer remembered again. And we find that each one of us, in our own way, is doing the very best we can according to our life. That is our understanding. And therefore, no necessity for judgment. I am no better and no worse than any man that lives. And it's a terrific thing. Wonderful. And those two amongst you who are new, this is the most fascinating thing that any man or any woman can ever get to see. Because it seems again, as we go along, that it's the great process of self-discovery. The great process of finding God's child in us. And perhaps that is what this great experience called life is all about. And perhaps after we've come into this way, and after we have learned to do these things one day at a time just because we want to, we find out that this is not a getting life at all, but rather a giving life. And the more we pour it out, just because we want to, the more we get. Because it's the pouring out that increases the mold and lets the more come in. It's terrific. It's fascinating. It's the only easy way I've ever known to live. And maybe pretty soon we find out what the young man meant when he said, "Fear not, little flock. It's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." And when he said, "Take no thought of the morrow, what you shall eat, what you shall drink, or wherewithal you shall be clothed. Your heavenly Father knoweth what you have need of before you even ask." And maybe we find, praise God, that it's our business to walk in this way. It's our business to live the AA principles. That is our business. And it's God's business to take care of us. And we don't even have to tell him how. How simple, how beautiful it is. I highly recommend it. And lastly, the one thing that gets bigger, as far as I know, the one thing that just grows and grows with me all the time. Until now, I have to watch out. I can't even talk about these things without shedding a few tears. I'm so grateful I can't see. I could not do these things. I could not get sober and stay sober. But it's only after the admission of defeat, the coming to believe, and the walking in this way that these things have happened. And I'm so grateful to AA for showing me the way to sobriety. So grateful to AA for showing me the way to God. And so grateful to God for all these good things. Daily, I ask myself this question. What is important? And if the day is a little rough, 100 times I might have to ask myself, what is important? And I always have to come back to this thing. There is nothing on earth so important as this one being. Consciously, walking in this way, one day at a time.